This is VSiN by the Books on VSiN, the sports betting network.
And we begin the Monday edition of VSiN by the Books. Dave Ross here, downtown Las Vegas at Circus Sports. Look who it is. It's our closer back home, somehow, some way, in the great city of Cleveland, Ohio. Jensen Lewis, my favorite movie, and again, you can debate if it's a Thanksgiving Day movie or not. I believe it's the best Thanksgiving Day movie. Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. You didn't to do the trains, a little automobile, a lot of plane, but you made it back in time for the show. How was the weekend, first and foremost, before all the flight calamities?
Yes, first and foremost, very, very grateful to be part of ESPN Super Regional coverage for the right to get to the College World Series in Omaha this week. We were down in Chapel Hill, and my first time back there, Dave, since I was a recruit to potentially be a North Carolina Tar Heel, so many moons ago. Back when I was extremely good looking, and you know, now obviously a lot has changed, but it is such a you'll appreciate this as a golf fanatic. So someone put out there, because of the scenics, and our crew was just phenomenal at being able to give you kind of the sights of what Boschmer Stadium looked like. There was a comparison to that atmosphere and that look being the Augusta National of college baseball. And I was like, you know, when you look around, you walk around the grounds, it's a very intimate setting. It's very cozy, very green, you know, like all of the aesthetics were just phenomenal. And after game one, I got to tell you, I was like, this is 2-Q. Carolina's just going to boat race him. But somewhere our jefe, Steve Cohen, was smiling yesterday when Bear Down came back. Two late inning comebacks, both on Saturday and yesterday, for the Wildcats to punch their ticket. 19th time they'll be in Omaha. I know Mike Palm has a pretty big ticket on the Arizona Wildcats to win the College World Series. So he is alive and well. But as you said, the calamities, I mean, there's never a dull moment whenever I'm trying to make it back so that we can be in studio, or at least my home studio, so we can do our show and make the least amount of problems for our production crew. But, you know, we all were watching Carlos Alcaraz, right? And I know we'll get into it here coming to the headlights, headlines and highlights, yep. But I would put it on par with that. So I will save the rest of the story for when we get to that, because it ties in perfectly. But we are here, and that's all that matters.
Yep. Boy, the worst things are, could you please, if you have a connecting flight, you're going to need to go to gate blank, and you're like, my goodness, I got to move, people. Let's get it going. But you're back here. We got a great show lineup on this Monday. Greg Peterson's going to join us in just a little bit down here at the bottom half of this hour. Break down the Major League Baseball card here on a Monday. Oh, America, buckle up. It's our open. We have the Canadian Open this weekend, our Open, the U.S. Open this week. Tyler Fulgham, kind enough to hop in with us here from ESPN to break down what he sees. Is it Scotty, Rory, or bust? We'll discuss. And the great Will Hill will join us to begin hour number three as well with the NBA Finals. We'll get to that here in a second as well. 1-1 there with Indiana and OKC. And Rachel Dorey is going to hop on here to round out hour number three as we get ready for game three tonight in the Stanley Cup playoffs. So far, Stanley Cup and the NBA playoffs, 1-1's there. Very interesting as we switch venues. But without further ado, it's time for our highlights and headlines.
Help your bottom line with today's highlights and headlines.
This one felt like it was, I can go to bed early type night, right? Yes. 123-107 is the final for OKC. They win by 16. Remember, this thing closed 11.5. The number kept ticking up as game two before we got there. And Jensen, I'll say this. It was never really in doubt in this one. But one thing that I'm very appreciative of when I wake up this morning, I'll pull back the curtain a little bit. You know, our producer, Brandon Valesky, there in Chicago, is going to put that rundown together, take a perusal before I go to sleep. And I said, I'm going to bed. There's no way this over is going to hit. 228. Yeah, right. This is a dead under. And I wake up this morning, and I get the completed rundown, and I see 123-107. I go, no, that's a typo. Brandon must be 97. There's no way they got to 107. And then you know what they didn't do? They didn't quit. The Pacers didn't quit. So there is a theme here. They fall back game one, big 15 in the fourth quarter, come back and win that game. Fall back here. Yeah, they don't cover the number, but the game somehow does go over. They scored about 20 points in the last 5 minutes, Indiana did, to get that over. If you were on that, if you were on the underside last night, that was a right side, wrong result, as it does somehow get to 230 here. But Jensen, bigger picture, SGA was spectacular again. I felt like Tyrese Haliburton, they got to get him going sooner in the game, if you know what I mean. He got his 17 points late, kind of nondescript there. But I think this is the OKC we thought we were going to see in game one. They finished the job in game two.
No doubt. And again, mark of a champion, right, is the ability to get off the mat, yep, be able to come back swinging. And you kind of look at that first quarter. All right, not a blowout, a 6-point, you know, advantage after one. But you got the sense in the second quarter where they started to really put the screws to the Pacer offense that the Thunder would be in a great spot to make this a laugher. A couple of notes here. By the way, if you have DraftKings, they ran a promo yesterday. They did a boosted odds of the Thunder to win and SGA to have 35 or more.
Woo.
Oh, my God. What a horrible beat. he ends on right on 34.
Oh.
And that's a tough one. They had it boosted to 2-1 odds. It was like plus $1.25. But either way, that was a tough one. I know that stood out. Alex Caruso, come on down. Your table's ready. 4-for-8 from distance, perfect from the line. He gets 20 points. But then, as you said, the Pacers, just again, limited. This is kind of where we saw Oklahoma City, Dave, in the regular season at home, when they had those double digit pregame spreads. It usually got to the line there and got to the window with relative ease. So not surprised here. Now we get moving day in the NBA Finals. Game 3 at Bankers Life coming up this week. And anxious to see what that home crowd is going to be like. I'm sure Pat McAfee's show is going to be live from Indiana. I mean, there is going to be – it's not going to be the Indianapolis 500 fervor, but there is going to be – a boatload of excitement to get this NBA Finals game underway for Game 3.
Another one that was kind of nice to wake up to. I had one of those boosted plays there, as you're referring to here, Jensen, in town. I had SGA over 29.5 points and over 7.5 assists. So he got one late for me. He got 8 assists.
Yeah.
So a couple of those that you didn't expect to see in the account this morning made up for a rough UFC 316 for yours truly. So that was a nice little bounce back that you have. I always say this, right? We talk about with Will Hill. Remember these. When you get these ones you don't expect, they're kind of nice when you miss out on some of the ones you do expect. 328 minutes. That's how long we saw Jannik Sinner and Carlos Alcaraz play tennis on the red clay of Roland Garros. And Carlos, an all-timer, coming back to win this one in 5 sets. He was down 2 sets to none. And even more so than being down 2 sets to none, he's facing triple match point against his racket here. And at that point, I believe it was 65-1 in the live number if you wanted to take Alcaraz to come back and beat Jannik Sinner. And he did just that. Jensen, I know some are saying, is it the greatest tennis match they've ever seen? It might not be for me. I still go back to one that really stings, two at Wimbledon that stand out, were Nadal, Federer, the one that went deep into the night. Remember that? They were sitting up on Henman Hill, and they didn't have the lights back then, and that was an incredible match. And also, I do, the one that stings is a Novak Djokovic, where you have Federer about to win another Wimbledon title. He's got 2 match points on his racket. And I wonder what the live number was that day as Novak came back, broke serve, and then won in that dramatic comeback there. So got to be up there in the pantheon of what we saw yesterday with Alcaraz. But boy, if you're Sinner, this is going to be one of those like Roger. I don't know that you'll ever get over it, no matter how many times you win a major and or a French Open title.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I don't know if there are any of the Agassi, Pete Sampras, tilts that would get into this kind of an echelon. But I had it on in our broadcast booth down there at Chapel Hill. And I'm like, ugh. I mean, I had a flyer on Alcaraz at even money before the match. And I'm like, I'll have a little skin in the game. After 2 sets, I was like, I don't have to worry about watching this one anymore. What a comeback.
Yeah.
Triple match point, ends up finding his way out of the corner. And then, as you said, one of the great all-time comebacks, not only in tennis history, but perhaps sports history. The marathon of marathons, when they do the 30 for 30, what will the title be for you Atlanta Falcons fans out there? Another 28-3 blown lead. Just saying that the 65-1, as I pay off the tees, for Alcaraz to come back, I think that was, as I was checking some offshore books, I think that was the line for me to make the connecting flight. Dave, we touched down, and I think I had 12 minutes.
Oh.
And we weren't even to the gate. By the time we got to the gate, so I'm in. We come in at D27. I got to make it to D10. All right. Now I haven't run sprints. This is probably a decade at least. And I got my backpack with me because I put all my gear just in case the worst would happen, so we could still do the show. I'll make it. My bag will get here at some point. So by the time we get off the plane, I've got about 3 minutes, maybe 3 minutes, 30 seconds to go from one side of the concourse there at Dulles all the way to the other.
Oh, man.
I'm told the very kind gate agents there, as I got there, I mean, I'm coming in hot, right?
Oh, yeah.
Third, heading for home. And the lady goes, connecting to Cleveland? I said, yes. And she goes, oh, man, we weren't holding the plane, but we were praying for you. And I'm like, I can't believe I got here. And here's the thing. The 65-1 to Alcaraz, my bag somehow made it. Checked bag.
Oh, that's 100-1.
Somehow made it.
100-1.
Everything is here. So if you parlayed it, congratulations, you're a winner. I didn't have me getting here to do the show today the way it was looking. So that's an all-timer for me as well.
We need a better comp for older people like myself to O.J. Simpson and those Hertz commercials back in the day in the 70s when he would run through, the juice was running through the airport. We need a better updated person to model after. But Jensen, you made it. Speaking of making it too, shout out to Coco Gauff, American in Paris. She gets it done on Saturday against Aryna Sabalenka, a comeback of her own to win that one. So it was nice to see another American women get back in the winner's circle there on the red clay of Roland Garros. We'll update UFC 316 as well. Not great for yours truly. The NBA, the NHL, so much more. Jensen's here. I'm here. Come on back. Just getting it started. It's the Monday edition. VSiN by the books.
By the books, right here on VSiN.
We are back, VSiN by the books. Dave Ross and Jensen Lewis here on this Monday edition as we continue to recap what we saw over the weekend. I mentioned you get a couple nice breaks. We'll get the Canadian Open here a little bit later on. That was Ryan Fox coming back from New Zealand to beat our American Sam Burns up there. We'll get to those price points here in a sec. UFC 316, shout out to the crew here at Circa. It was great hanging out with Matt Eumanns and Bill Ady and the like. I got to watch the fights here, Jensen. A lot of fun. But I will say this, the good times were not had by all when it came to the tickets. My goodness, Merab Dvalishvili, with just an absolute demolition in the rematch of the Sugar Show, Sean O'Malley, the undercashes in that. And if you had Merab via submission, take my cap off to you, sirs and ladies out there. Didn't see that coming, Jensen. But Merab was even better, 2.0 against O'Malley. And I'll say this, too. One thing I liked about Sean O'Malley's afterward, he gave full kudos to Merab this time around. Was not the case the first time. So I appreciated that. At least from Sean in defeat. But, boy, the effort was not there. Really good showing from Merab. Arguably now starting to go into that rarefied air of the best ever at 145. As time goes on, we'll find out about that. And then a new champion in the women's bantamweight division, Kayla Harrison, a destruction of the Venezuelan vixen Juliana Pena. She gets the submission as well. Right there at the end of the second round, I thought Juliana was going to survive to the third. It could have got interesting if they could have gotten to the deeper rounds there, but that did not happen. And then maybe I would say the surprise of the night was Patchy Mix coming over, and a lot of hype about Patchy, and is he going to be one of the best bantamweights out there? He looked awful in his loss to Mario Bautista, so plus money dog on Bautista hits as well. But those were the three takeaways from me at UFC 316. Now, let's spin it forward a little bit to Game 3 tonight in the Stanley Cup playoffs, and that's going to be the Panthers back home in Sunrise tonight. I'm a little surprised, not that the total 6.5. I put this out there in the X over the weekend. I said, well, let's get those 6.5s out there since the first two both get over that total as we get those great finishes in overtime. But I'm surprised that it's juiced a little bit to the under. Now it's switched. It's still $1.20 there to the under. It was as high as $1.25, so a little bit of a comeback there. If you want to play the over, it's even money. Jensen, what am I missing? Are we expecting that maybe this one's played closer to the vest, and we don't get that open ice like we've seen in the first two games?
Buddy, I jumped in on the puck line early here on the Panthers. I do feel that there have been scoring chances even that they've left on the table. That goes also in the game two victory to be able to level this series. And I think also, too, just the way that they've played at home, it feels like they could get a little bit of an early surge here and maybe have Sergei Bobrovsky make it stand up. So I think just to kind of see – you know, where the money ends up as we get closer to puck drop there. But that was my first thought. And then I just happened to look at, you know, some potential props here in case that's the way you want to go. Really, you know, the only one, and it's going to be kind of weird because he's had himself a hell of a Stanley Cup final thus far. But Brad Marchand, maybe if you want to take a stab at under a half for a point, so for him not to record a point, it feels like he's been in and around a lot of stuff here thus far, and so it's kind of weird to go against the trends there. But that was one that kind of stuck out to me. Sammy Reinhart, if you want to go for his shots on goal, maybe take a stab at the over 2.5, and then you can get that at $1.20 on DraftKings, $1.25. On BetMGM. So just a couple of things that stood out from a player prop standpoint. But I do think Florida has that opportunity to kind of impose their will early here. And as we know, Stuart Skinner struggling a bit on the road. And again, not necessarily a Connor Hellebuck situation here, but anxious to kind of see what that Florida crowd is like and what the offense, more importantly for the Panthers, does there in that first period.
Boy, look at the numbers in the Conn Smythe and how dramatically they have changed now from game to game. We mentioned it here in the program, I believe on Thursday or Friday, Jensen. Sam Bennett, you could have got him at 20-1. He has shot up the board to 6-1. Bobber is still 3-1 if you want to back the Panthers. But look at how close that number has gotten. And by the way, Connor McDavid is back to plus money to win the Conn Smythe at plus $1.05. So, again, you can get in those adjusted series prices here depending on who you think is going to win this thing. But those numbers in those quote-unquote correlated plays, Draisaitl, by the way, is the last of the single digits. You can get Leon here at 7-1 if you like Edmonton and don't think Connor is going to get that trophy. Brad Marchand, you mentioned the Rat, 20-1 here for Brad. And Sasha Barkov is sitting there at 15-1. But, like Jensen, those numbers have changed dramatically here after game two, and Bennett really is the guy, the big riser from 20-1 to 6-1. Would you go with the usual suspects? Because Bennett was not one of those, but the fact that he's gone over Draisaitl now to win the Conn Smythe is interesting to me.
Yeah, it is. And you mentioned Brad Marchand. Well, was he upwards? I feel like he was upwards of 100-1.
I think 75-1 coming into game two.
Okay.
So, but you're right, like 100-1 a little bit longer before the series. But look at how those numbers have shrunk.
I agree. So I'm kind of anxious if, you know, you look at, all right, so here's an idea. If you don't want to just take the Sam Bennett 6-1, you could just start going into those points markets game by game.
Yep.
And, you know, if you keep the units the same, that might be a way to go about it in case you kind of have, you know, one of those situations where Barkov finally catches some fire, you know, Marchand is doing what he's doing. So as I'm looking at it right now, Sam Bennett to record a point here for game three is minus $1.40. So very, you know, a very doable here. If he, you know, two or more is plus $3.50, three or more is 12-1. So I was just thinking along those ways, maybe an alternative way to attack that. If you believe that Sam Bennett is a guy that can challenge for it, maybe he doesn't get there because Bobrovsky ends up, you know, limiting this Oiler offense, but might be a way to attack it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Just something, maybe a little way to diversify your attack on the player prop front.
That's why I love doing the show with you. That Vanderbilt education went right in. I could just see that the wheels turning already of how to maybe get some positive ROI there on some of these other ways to go. I went to VCU, so my education level is not quite at the Vandy level there. By the way, let's get to a look ahead here for Game 3 Wednesday night. We're going to have Will Hill join us here later on this program as well to help us break it down. Thunder now are over $2 betting favorite here on the money line. If you think they're going to get it done after that 123-107 win last night, they're at minus $6 on the money line last night. So never a sweat there, and they cover that number 11.5 relatively easily. Maybe that 16-point number a little bit not indicative of how much they were really in control of this thing, kind of from pillar to post here. But now that you go to Indiana for Game 3 again on Wednesday, and this gets back to – you know, that overcashing. And again, we were on the under in game one, cha-ching. On the over in game two, cha-ching. We get those, barely. But I mentioned this kind of off the top, Jensen, of not quitting. The games are so spaced out. There's like Halliburton was in late. I know he got pulled with about 3 minutes to go there, but he got a lot of his points late. And I'm like, play him. You only get seven of these if you're lucky, right? And you've got days off in between. Legs aren't going to be an issue. You're getting 2 days off in between these games, sometimes three games off. So, Jensen, just play it out and see what happens. Maybe that's why Indiana's been able to make some of these epic comebacks here. Plus an hour 70 here on the money line for Indiana in game three. It's going to be different, and Oklahoma City is still young on the road. Quick look ahead. What do you think Wednesday night's going to look like?
Yeah, initial lean goes right to the Thunder there at 5.5, and just kind of feels like, as I said, you get up off the mat. To use our UFC terminology, you know, you had the takedown from Halliburton in that last second shot, and then, you know, the ability to kind of get back up into the middle rounds here. And, you know, now all of a sudden, the longer this thing goes, it feels like the Thunder can kind of impose their will here. So I would say at 5.5, the spread right now, and you can get that both at Circa and at DraftKings. If you want to take the spread out of it, I think you can go probably on to the Thunder money line. And probably, do we think that Shea can get to 30 again? If so,
I do.
Okay. So if we do that, David, we just build it out here. Thunder money line, and then parlay that with Shea Gildas Alexander to get 30 or more points. That's minus $1.20. So if you're not confident in the spread and you think the Pacers find a way to keep this thing close at home, you'd have to believe that Shea's going to have another big game to get a win on the road.
I'll say this too. You know, watching that third quarter in its entirety, and it was a parade to the free throw line for both teams. I don't see it necessarily the same way of like, are they going to eat the whistle in OKC? Like, Shea is that guy. He's that mid-range guy. He's a throwback player. And I kind of like his game in the fact that it's not just reliant on the three-point line. He is taking it into the lane there. He is making you work defensively, and he's going to the foul line. Yes. Some of those, you know, like the Brunsons and the head fakes and all that stuff that we've seen that players do these days, I get that. But a lot of this is because he's taking the ball inside the lane and he's making these guys defend. So I'm not one of those guys, all free throw merchant and all that stuff. Like, he's making these guys work defensively. That over doesn't get there if you don't get those foul calls. So if they do call it the similar way here, I do like his points prop to go over that 30 points and possibly look to the over again at 228. Early look there. We got a great deal right now. $41 off an annual subscription by using the promo code BOOK, title of the show, when you go to VSiN.com/subscribe. And also Josh Applebaum, his NFL Sharp Betting Playbook. You're going to get that free pre-order right there when you become a VSiN Pro subscriber. So go to VSiN.com/subscribe. Use the promo code BOOK.
By the books, right here on VSiN.
We are back. This Monday edition of VSiN by the Books continues here. We're going to have Tyler Fulgham join us here in hour number two. Will Hill, Rachel Dory to round out hour number three as we tackle, obviously, the U.S. Open this week. We got the NBA playoffs, Stanley Cup playoffs. But how about a Major League Baseball slate here on a Monday? The man who never sleeps. Our own Greg Peterson does a great job here in the network. Give him a follow at GUnit_81. Joins us now on the Progressive Guest Line on this Monday. So because there's never a time to sleep for you, Greg, I know you've already looked at this slate here on a Monday. What jumps out to you on one of these lighter days where we don't have the full slate of Major League Baseball? What's grabbed your attention here on a Monday morning?
Well, we have to address this first things first. The day ends in Y and we don't have a day game. Why, Major League Baseball? Why don't we have a day game? They did us dirty there, but what really stands out to me, the fact that we have the Sacramento A's games just continue to be off the board every single night. Like, I can't do any write-ups for these games or anything like that, because you'll notice if you're trying to bet these games right now, like one or two places have it up, it's listed as to be determined. It has been this way for a week plus. I really wish MLB would do something about this, because it's so strange. Like, I mean, it's not just for bettors, but it's for the casual fan saying, oh, we want to go to this Angels versus A's game today. Who's pitching for the A's? Oh, daddy, I would want to go. And dad has to say, oh, it's old to be determined who's on the bump. Little bit of a mystery there, but I hear he's got good heat. Like, that's not selling tickets right there. So the Athletics, please announce a starting pitcher for us so that way we can bet these games overnight. That said, right now we're seeing the Angels at DraftKings at minus 164. In all likelihood, I'll be fading the A's once again.
Jensen, I like where Greg's head's at. What do you make of that from somebody that obviously the back end of the bullpen? Greg wants those starters to be named. Should we get Rob Manfred and start this movement?
Listen, GP, a day one executive order in a Lewis Ross administration, at least one day game and starters at least 12 hours. Before.
Yes.
That's a day one executive order. Hey, speaking of executives, we know that the Marlins have had their issues not only this year, but one of the dubious marks of losing a series, much less getting swept by the Colorado Rockies earlier last week. You've got an intriguing handicap here. Give people an idea why you like the dog in this spot and perhaps two offenses that have left a lot to be desired.
I don't know about you, but I'm feeling 22 on this one, and that's the age of Eury Pérez, who's going to be getting the start here for the Miami Marlins. If you remember that name, he was so good during the 2023 season, looked like one of the bright stars in all of baseball, has major surgery, misses all of 2024. He is back. He is making his first start in over a year, and they did him right with regards to rehab. What drives me crazy, and it's a reason why I fade so many guys coming off the injured list, is that they'll give them like two or three ho-hum sort of rehab starts. They come back way too early. They are not used to it. He has made 8 rehab starts. He has a sub-2 ERA. He's getting 10 half strikeouts per 9 innings at the minor league level. And now he gets a face-off against a lineup that is about as close to a minor league level as it gets out there in the National League. That would be the Pittsburgh Pirates. They're averaging 3.2 runs per game at home. That's dead last in the National League. They really have not been ripping the cover off the ball season long. Good landing spot here for Eury Pérez. Now, probably not going to give the world's greatest amount of length, and this has been a Miami Marlins bullpen that, I mean, it's been struggling a little bit. Let's call it what it is. Bottom eight in the big leagues in terms of bullpen ERA. Not like this Pittsburgh Pirates bullpen has been anything to write home about either. With Miami Marlins, you've got guys like Kyle Sowers and company that are moving the line. Sowers has been able to give you a little bit of power. Augustin Ramirez has as well. But I think that for the Miami Marlins, they get to Mike Burrows, who he's in his fourth start as well. A little bit of a young gun guy, but has been posting up north of 5 ERA. I'm more trusting the young guy in Eury Pérez. I'm seeing the solo at 8.5 as well. I like the under to go along with that Miami Marlins money line.
I love the handicap there, and certainly to that under, Greg, you got the better of the number at 8.5. Now I'm seeing mostly eights out there across the board. Would you still play it? Because you still have an advantage, according to your numbers, to the under.
Yep.
But because you got the better of the number, if somebody's listening or watching out there and they go, man, that hook's not there anymore, is that a stay-away spot if it's down to 8 since they didn't get the best of the number?
I would still play it because I've set my handicap at a 7.6. And additionally, sometimes if you're feeling, man, I missed out on the number, if you want to wait a little bit as well, sometimes these numbers come back as well, because you'll sometimes see a game where it'll start out at like an 8.5, go down to 8, and then it'll go back to an 8.5 as well. And always do be shopping around, because when you have multiple books, you've got multiple outs, and recognize that that's not possible in every state. I do think that that's always a good way to be able to play it as well, because I do think that in this case, if you're getting like a minus 115 to the under of 8.5 versus like a like 10, 15 cents less juice on an 8, that it actually is worth it in this case.
All right, Greg, a couple of matchups here, and one that we'll obviously look at in the Daily Diamond, that's the Cubs and the Phillies. And let me bring you in on the Rays and the Red Sox, too. So I'll give you the floor here. Listen, the Phillies lost 9 of their last 10. Mm-hmm. It's a way different ball club than we've seen a couple of weeks ago. Conversely, the Tampa Bay Rays silently making their way up the standings in the American League East. Which of these matchups intrigues you more, and do you have plays for both those games?
Oh, I do have plays for both of them. And for the Philadelphia Phillies, you mentioned that losing streak. It coincides with Zach Wheeler actually going on the paternity list. First things first, congratulations to Zach Wheeler. But he's going to be making his first start since May 29th. So he pretty much got his turn in the rotation skipped. And the last start that he had, he did give up 6 runs against the Atlanta Braves. That was a home start. Now, If you take a look at Zach Wheeler throughout his career, has always had his struggles against the Atlanta Braves. Not overly much issue there, but I mean, just when you're thrown out of rhythm as a starting pitcher, when you do have a little bit of, shall we say, a gap, that does concern you a little bit. Now, I'm going to be willing to back the Philadelphia Phillies here, mainly because I do think that they also get to Matthew Boyd. Matthew Boyd has an ERA that's hovering right around about a 4 away from home, so he's been acting up a little bit there with the Chicago Cubs, certainly a rock-solid lineup, number one out there in the National League along with the LA Dodgers in terms of runs per game, but I think that that's going to be a high-scoring game. Seeing that total of 7.5, especially with that Phillies bullpen, I do like the over. And then with regards to that Rays versus Boston Red Sox game, for the Red Sox, they get a win on Sunday Night Baseball against the New York Yankees. Now, I typically like to fade teams coming off of Sunday Night Baseball, especially if they need to travel. But this is one of these cases where I'm actually going to be willing to back the Boston Red Sox, mainly because they're facing the Wizard of Oz, Shane Boz, and he has been the Wizard of actually giving up runs, not so much Wizard of anything else. 3-plus runs allowed in 6 out of his last 7 starts, and I like Shane Boz. Like, I really want Shane Boz to be a good pitcher. I've been in on him for a very long time. They acquired him in that Chris Archer deal many, many years ago from the Pittsburgh Pirates. He's just not panning out right now. And then Brian Bayo himself gives up a lot of contact, fewer than 7 strikeouts per 9 innings. As a sinker ball pitcher, he's able to get those double play balls, but I mean, he's got about a 3.93 ERA. Fielding Pent, that's nearly a point higher. I see runs in this game. I like the over. I do like the Red Sox, who starting to find their way offensively without Alex Bregman on the money line.
Well, the Chris Archer deal, we're going back now, Greg, and you start making me think the Cubs, the Mets, and Robinson Cano. Like, I try to forget those days. Cardinals are going to be at home against the Blue Jays today, and also the Padres at home against the Dodgers there. Are you backing both of these home teams today?
Oh, I am backing both of these home teams, and the St. Louis Cardinals have been just a different team when they've been at home, winning well north of 60% of their games at home. And I mean, allow me to take you through these home and road splits of Jose Berríos. Now, for Berríos, he's been much better on the road this year than he has been in the past, but I mean, this is a decade's worth of data right here. 3.56 home ERA with less than a home run allowed per 9 innings, 9.1 strikeouts per 9 innings. When he goes on the road, 4.56 ERA, nearly 1.5 home runs allowed per 9 innings. That strikeouts per 9 rate goes down to 8.1. Not the same guy when he's away from home. Blue Jays have gotten a little bit warm recently, but you know what? It's still a Blue Jays team that is averaging about 3.3 runs per game away from home. That's a bottom 8 mark in the big leagues. So I do think that with St. Louis, the fact that you've got these guys doing a nice job, move the line, getting on base, they could use a little bit more power themselves. I do think that they do just enough to be able to get it done. And then for the San Diego Padres, you want to hear about a home and road split? How about that of Nick Pavetta? Nick Pavetta, .69 home ERA, 2 home runs allowed at 37 and a third innings this far this season, 4.94 ERA, 5 home runs allowed in 31 innings. I believe that we're seeing Nick Pavetta really coming into his own this year because Boston was not a ballpark that suited what he was able to do. This Petco Park is perfect for him because he's a little bit more of a fly ball pitcher. He gets you 10 strikeouts per 9 innings, so he's going to be challenging these hitters. I like Nick Pavetta in this spot with the LA Dodgers having to travel from the Midwest from that series in St. Louis on over to San Diego.
Give it to me, Jensen. Jose Berríos, I can't trill.
Jose Berríos.
There it is. Jose, buddy. Can you get that, Greg? Can you trill like that? I can't do it.
Jose Berríos.
That's
the best I can do for you.
That's pretty darn good. Greg, you're the best. We appreciate you staying up late with us or early for some people here. So have a great slate today on the Monday edition, and we'll get back to you again soon.
It's all the same. Early, late, who cares? I always appreciate it. Thank you.
You got it. There he is, everybody. Give him a follow on X at GUnit_81. Sharp Plays, if you haven't checked them out yet, sharpplays.com. Unmatched transparency, records updated daily, AI betting analysis, real-time global betting information, alerts directly from the pros. They are watched by the books, trusted by the pros. Check them out at sharpplays.com.
The books right here on VSiN.
We are back, VSiN by the books. Enjoyed that conversation as we always do with Greg Peterson here to get us started here on a Monday. Tyler Foljam is going to join us here in hour number 2 to break down the United States Open here. And I'm fascinated, as you well know, not just because it's our Open Championship. It's the third major of the year. Obviously, we've got one more to get to here in Port Rush next month. But it is Oakmont. It's a historic golf course in Pennsylvania. Arnold Palmer played his last event there, if you go back to 1994. A lot of history at this place here. And let's just call it what it is when you look at it from kind of this first look at a Monday before we get to Thursday. It's brutal, Jensen. It is going to – this is why we like the U.S. Open. The hard is what makes it good. This is not easy, kids. You could be looking at – and we'll figure out as the week goes, and hopefully we'll get some on-the-course reporting from Oakmont this week – what that winning score could look like, Jensen. But, like, let's just go back yesterday to the Canadian Open. The winning score was 18 under par. That was Ryan Fox and Sam Burns, five-hole playoff. And a congratulations to the New Zealander. The Kiwi gets it done, Ryan Fox, as he beats Sam Burns. And, oh, by the way, Sam Burns is a five-footer in the first playoff hole to win it. If you had Sam Burns' ticket, that's a bad beat. It looks like he's at that point, he's a $5 betting favorite to win this thing. And somehow he does not get it done. But Fox does get it done by finally burning the 18th hole in that playoff. But you're not going to see 18 under par is the point. What we saw last week, it's going to look obviously very, very different to what we're going to see this week at Oakmont. So, Jensen, I think par is in play. If it's really the way it looks right now, I don't know that even par is going to have you out of a running to win this thing on Sunday. So, like, the mentality has got to change of – you know, the PGA Championship of Augusta National, where you're looking at 10 under par somewhere in there, right? It ain't going to be that. If somebody wins at 10 under par, they have mollywopped the field and they're going to put on a show for the ages. Now, Scottie Scheffler obviously is going to be that first guy we look at plus 275. Rory missed the cut this week at the RBC. He was 9 over par, Jensen. Now, we've talked a lot about Rory in the program, certainly from a betting term, but you do have to get inside their heads a little bit to see where they are. I can't play him at that number at plus 850. Now, that's drifted because of this poor form now, which is amazing that we're talking about poor form from a guy who just won at Augusta in April. And now we turn the page to June, and he feels like a guy that's completely lost, at least in the short term. He'll get it back. He's one of the best players in the world. We're not worried about that. But for this week, Jensen, with as brutal as these conditions are going to be, he's long, but he's not accurate right now. And the same case might be said for Bryson DeChambeau. At 9-1, I don't think you can play the golf ball out of the rough this week. Like, you got to be a straight guy. And I don't know that Bryson and Rory are those two guys that I think of when it comes to accuracy.
Okay. All right. So a lot to unpack. My initial thoughts here for you. First and foremost, as you know, I like to do these cross-sport parlays. And I thought, let's put a Scottie Scheffler top 10 finish with the Thunder money line. That gets you to minus $1.10. Okay, so right now, Scotty is minus 350, top 10. And so, if you want to just kind of increase your odds a little bit there, we would think that is certainly a viable way to go. Okay, your thoughts on the rough. And yes, we've seen the pictures of it. You also, from a mental standpoint, right here, Dave, people and guys that are able to kind of have that short memory on, all right, you know what, we're here. We got to get out of it because everyone's going to have to deal with it at some point. I did have Bryson circled. I had Rombo. I had John Rahm circled. Resiliency for a guy that has been through plenty of tough tracks. I'm happy to look at 12-1 for him. Resiliency, and again, it can get sideways for JT at some point. But at 40-1, you can get worse. Guys at far longer odds than that. Shane Lowry at 45-1. Throw that one out to you again for a guy that is as gritty a player as we have. Is someone that stood out. You were thinking of guys that need to be straight. You know, that obviously brings Xander Schauffele into the conversation. Tyrrell Hatton, I think, also a guy in there. I want to get behind Ludvig Åberg, but I know Rexy kind of told us last week that, you know, until proven otherwise, like the talent, of course, is there, but can he put it together in a way that makes him competitive? The only other two, the one that Matt Humans loves to hate, Colin Morikawa, and then Victor Hovland was also someone that stood out to me as well. Just early kind of looks here on a Monday, understanding course fit, understanding recent form, and then also the major pedigree, guys that legitimately can win these kinds of tournaments.
I will say this, the Big Swede played better this weekend at the RBC. Now, again, the RBC is wide open fairways, right? So he had a really good showing there and a really good week and a good Sunday as well. 35-1, normally I just jump at that number, sight unseen, and say, give me the Swede at that type of number. You're not going to get it. But because this course is going to play so differently from what they just played north of the border in Toronto, I'm kind of with you on that. I'd like to see a good first day to see if he can handle these conditions because it's going to be brutal mentally. I will tell you this, and I know Brandon Valesky, our producer, doesn't want to hear it. Jocko, Joaquin Niemann at 35-1 is a straight hitter. That's he's got length, and he hits it straight. That is normally a really good qualification here. And I will say this, X-Man at 20-1. We know he's not had a Xander Schauffele-type season after winning two tournaments last year, two majors a year ago. I think people have already forgotten that. He's rounding back in a form. He's obviously as long as you need to be and as straight as it comes there. So I'll be looking at those guys. You know, Bryson's won two U.S. Opens, which is kind of amazing. Last year, the epic one that everybody thought Rory had. Rory misses three-footers down the stretch, and Bryson wins it with a bunker shot for the ages last year at Pinehurst. Again, it's going to play very different from Pinehurst. His other win at a U.S. Open is at Wingfoot. And if you go back to that year in 2020, it was the rough was down that year. You could play it out of the rough. That was a COVID year, if you remember. So kind of want to say atypical, but not your typical U.S. Open. When Rory won the U.S. Open, and I was there for that one, that was at Congressional way back in the day in D.C., there was no rough that week. So Rory could hit it all over the lot, and he could, you know, trample it down and go get good lies out of there. That will not be this week. So I think Oakmont is going to be very different from the styles of U.S. Opens that Bryson and Rory have won on. So, look, it gets back to the elephant in the room. That is Scottie Scheffler, right? I mean, you would think for somebody who hits it as straight as Scottie does. Now, he has had the lefts a little bit as of late, but he's plenty long and normally the most accurate ball striker out there. Like, I don't want to play 275. I won't play plus 275. If you made that 6-1, and I know that's the way you're getting creative to get there, Jensen, I think that's the way to do it. I would be stunned if Scottie Scheffler is not in the conversation on Sunday, right?
Of course. And I think ultimately now that we've kind of seen him in the last 3 to 4 weeks, I think we can all agree that he's back. And ultimately, if you want to set it and forget it, that's why I said you put in that top 10 play and perhaps, you know, parlay it with something else because – you know, barring something completely unforeseen, we believe that he would be there. Anyone that kind of also sticks out for you in a placement market, and I'll give you a couple of guys for me. I mean, getting you mentioned Morikawa and you mentioned Xander. I was looking at Xander. I mean, Xander plus $1.60 for top 10, right? If he's hitting it straight, he should be there. You know, Bryson's intriguing also at even money. Something to consider there. I mentioned Tyrrell Hatton. How about 6.5-1 for top five? Woo! If he can be in there? And our boy, the Big Swede, 5.5-1. So definitely some placement markets here that are quite intriguing here on a Monday as well.
Let me give you two guys that I like in placement markets that I will be playing, have not played yet. And I know this guy was previously in my no-fly zone. He's out of it. Cameron Young is back, baby! Cam Young! He played really well this week. He didn't get there for me. I had a long ticket on Cam and some. I had a nice ticket after Thursday on him as well. He comes to the 18th hole, down a shot, needs to get a birdie in 18, doesn't make it, gets in the rough. But I listened to Cam afterward too. And you want to talk about a long hitter, maybe one of the longest outside of Rory McIlroy on tour, and straight off the tee. So Cameron Young, you can get him at top 10 right now at about 9-1. I like that placement market potentially for a guy like Cam Young who's playing some of the best golf that we've seen for a guy that's been a runner-up so many times, still hasn't won on the PGA Tour. Another guy is Daniel Berger that I'm going to get back in there in a placement market this week. Berger right now has got plenty of length. He's a long shot at 100-1 to win the tournament. But again, another guy that's straight enough here, Jensen. You got to be long and you got to be straight this week. And I think those two guys might fit the bill. Can they win it? I think they're going to be outside shots to win it because Scottie's going to be tough really to beat. But in those placement markets, I look to some of those longer plays there for Cameron Young and Daniel Berger. Famous last words there, Jensen. If you're betting on sports, you want to try the ponies, you didn't do it over the weekend, great Belmont Stakes this weekend. First Bet, they're going to let you wager on hundreds of races every single day from top tracks across the U.S. and around the world. Sign up at firstbet.com. That's firstbet.com, the number one, stbet.com. Use the promo code VEASAN200. Claim a 20% rebate for your first 60 days, up to $200 when you head over to firstbet.com and do so today.